From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, each and every one of them covered by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. It is my honor and privilege to be escorting you through the weekend. This being the second day of that effort, just really great to be on board with you, and I'm being peppered with questions, email, and fast blast, and all the rest of it. For example, Keith in San Anselmo, California. Art, are you and your wife in Pahrump temporarily till she has a baby? And are you both eventually returning to the Philippines? Well, who knows? I don't have the answer to that question yet. We own the condominium in Manila. And we are here until, I guess, my wife decides whether she wants to remain. As you know, it was not her first choice to come to the United States. And people ask, well, why did we? Well, that silly letter, that awful letter going around, which has been going around actually the better part of a decade now, I think, that hate letter. Somebody wrote a hate letter of all things against Filipinos and sent it out in my name. Then it got published in newspapers there. And so it became a little dangerous, and that's more or less why we're here. Now, that won't go on forever, or on the other hand, it might. But as far as being here, I think we're here, you know, sort of semi-permanently. I mean, obviously, look, after the baby is born, we will take a trip back to the Philippines and show off the baby, you know, to her family. Nothing is forever. Boy, have I learned that in life. Nothing is forever. So right now we're here and we'll be here for until we're not. I guess that's the only way I can say it, but it looks like we're here. Let's look at the world news. Always fittingly depressing. Three legal immigrants, absolutely legal, in a cargo truck were detained at the Port of Miami Sunday on what was a routine inspection, which raised concerns for some reason. Police say the incident just might have stemmed in part from a language barrier. The port's cargo area was shut down Sunday as the Miami-Dade squad x-rayed the truck, scanned the whole thing for radioactive materials. Nothing unusual, but what was found at all. Two of Saddam Hussein's co-defendants, you may remember, were taken from their cells, told they were going to be hanged on the same day the former dictator was. Their lawyer said Sunday the two condemned men still are waiting as Iraqi officials try and decide how to avoid the kind of outcry that followed Saddam's hanging on December 30th. So, they still live. A subway train derailed Sunday near downtown Washington, sending 20 people to the hospital, prompting the rescue of 60 from a tunnel. The accident happened about 3:45 p.m. near the underground Mount Vernon Square station that serves two lines beneath the Washington Convention Center. I wonder why they never print good news. I've wondered about that all my life, and I know many of you do. Democrats now running Congress will not give President Bush a blank check to wage war on Iraq, according to the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, suggesting they could, well, perhaps deny him the money. If he calls for additional troops, they may not supply the money. Yet Pelosi's second-in-command and a Senate leader on foreign affairs questioned the wisdom and legality of using the power of the purse to thwart the White House as Bush prepared to announce his revised war strategy this week. And I've heard that that includes about 20,000 more troops. That certainly would require money. And, of course, that's the way they have squished other wars, you know, just stop the money. The death toll from a riot at a Salvadoran prison rose to 21 after authorities on Sunday reported yet an additional fatality. Prison director Roberto Villanova said the maximum security prison, about 40 miles west of the capital, San Salvador, will be under a state of emergency for 15 days. Warsaw's new archbishop abruptly resigned Sunday over revelations that he cooperated with Poland's communist-era secret police, stunning worshippers, by sadly yielding the archbishop's throne just minutes before he was to be formally installed. To cries of no, no, and stay with us, in and outside St. John's Cathedral, a very despondent Stanislaw Wiglas read a letter to Pope Benedict in which he offered his resignation, quote, after deeply reflecting and assessing my personal situation. A Western Pennsylvania man's trying to solve a mystery that recently landed in his mailbox. It was a letter mailed more than 50 years ago and addressed to Frederick Zane Yost. The letter, with a 3-cent stamp, any of you remember a 3-cent stamp, and postmarked October 26th, 1954, was encased in a large Postal Service window envelope. There is a return address in nearby Richland Township, but no sender's name. Well, maybe somebody in the administration felt the need to open it. Las Vegas. For more than a decade, Microsoft Corporation Chairman Bill Gates and others in the tech industry have touted a vision of a connected lifestyle, one in which digital content can move across devices throughout the home and be taken on the go. It's been a slow march, but as Gates kicked off the International Consumer Electronics Show late Sunday, the industry has come farther than ever in delivering on that promise. Kind of like robots, they never quite got here the way they were promised. All right, we'll take a break and look at some of the, as Paul would say, the rest of the news. Coming up in the next hour, Lynn McTaggart, and she'll basically be talking about the Force. That's right, the Force. It's a little more complicated than that, but it's going to be a very, 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 you know, intent. It's going to be a very interesting interview. The remainder of this hour is going to be dedicated to open lines. So those of you who know the portal phone numbers are welcome to dial them now. If you have something of intense interest to this audience, and this audience does expect the unusual, then feel free to dial in. We'll be with you in just a moment. The Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority is expected to announce its decision next week regarding some very controversial work. A couple of British scientists who plan to mix human and animal cells in order to research cures for degenerative diseases. I'm not sure how good of an idea that is. However, the British scientists believe that their plan of creating a partly human and partly animal embryo, if halted, might hinder their work on potentially life-saving new treatments that could possibly benefit hundreds of patients. The hybrid embryos, if created, would be around 99.9% human and 0.1% animal in order to produce embryonic stem cells, the body's basic building blocks that can grow into all other types of cells. According to the Telegraph's UK edition, and I depend on them heavily for news that we don't get here, the new embryos would provide new hopes for patients suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cystic fibrosis, motor neuron disease, and Huntington's, all terrible. Dr. Stephen Minger at King's College London and Dr. Lyle Armstrong at the North England Stem Cell Institute in Newcastle are the two lead researchers on this project. They've assured us all that the hybrid embryos would be destroyed within just 14 days, a time when they have not started developing much. According to Dr. Minger, informally, we have been told by the HFEA they are unlikely to grant permission for our application at present. We have no therapies to even alleviate the symptoms for conditions like Alzheimer's, spinal muscular dystrophy, and motor neuron disease. Never mind, make an impact on disease progression. I just think it's not a good idea. Could there be forbidden sequences in the genome? Forbidden? Interesting word, right? Ones so harmful that they are not compatible with life? One group of researchers thinks so. Unlike most genome sequencing projects, which set out to search for genes that are conserved within and between species, their goal is to identify primes, DNA sequences, with chains of amino acids so dangerous to life they don't exist. It's like looking for a needle that's not actually in the haystack, said Greg Hempkin, professor of genetics at Boise State University in Idaho. He's leading this project. There must be some DNA or protein sequences that are not compatible with life, perhaps because they bind some essential cellular component, for example, and have therefore been selected out of circulation. There may be some that are lethal in some species, but not others. We're looking for those. But why? There must be some DNA or protein sequences that are not compatible with life and therefore have been selected out. To do this, he and his colleagues have developed software that calculates all the possible sequences of nucleotides, the letters of DNA, up to a certain length, and then scan the sequence databases, for example, the U.S. National Institutes of Health Gene Bank, to identify the smallest sequences that aren't present. Those that don't occur in one species but do in others are termed nullimers, while those that aren't found in any species are termed primes. That's really, really strange stuff, in my opinion. Very strange. And it sounds as though, and I could be wrong, but it sounds as though they're looking for something, well, they said it themselves, that would be incompatible with life. Now, why would you want to find that unless you were contemplating putting something together that would be harmful to life? Now, I could be way off base with that and probably am. It just sounds that way in the story. Let's go west of the Rockies and say hello, Larry, in Idaho. Hello, Larry, in Idaho. For some reason, I'm not getting audio. They're going to have to turn it up on the other end there or something. Hello, Larry, in Idaho. Do you hear me, Larry? Going once.
Yes.
Going. Are you there, Larry?
Yes, I am.
You are. Where were you, buddy?
Going to get my glasses so I could see what you said.
So you could see what I said.
Sir?
All right, then read my lips.
Okay.
You get that?
I'm
just messing with you. What's up?
Yeah, two questions. Did you get a 360-degree picture of Manila?
I did not. One of those pan pictures?
Well, this was some weeks ago, and I sent it to the address of the Premier Radio.
Oh, wrong. Send it again. Send it to, are you ready?
About as ready as I can get.
Okay, artbell@mindspring.com.
Oh, that's on the computer.
That's true.
I don't have one.
Oh, you don't have a computer?
No, sir.
How can you live in this day and age without a computer?
You'd be surprised how wonderful it can be without a computer.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I guess I might be.
Well, that was the number one question.
Okay, well, if you send it to Premier Radio, it will probably, maybe, eventually get to me.
Well, we'll see. I thought you would be interested in it, but now you're not in Manila anymore.
I still own a condominium there, sir, so I'm very interested in Manila. And I'd very much like to get it, actually.
I understand that. I think I told you at the time I was there 60 years ago. So that kind of puts the number on me. And now I've got a better one for you.
Okay.
You're really fond of the UFO story, right?
UFOs are something I look into on the program, yes, of
yes,
course.
Sir. Well, I know of a 110-year-old newspaper which has on the front page a UFO story.
A 110-year-old newspaper?
Roger.
What paper is it?
Well, do you want me to tell you on the air?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. It's the newspaper itself was called Silver Star. However, in recent years, it was changed to the Dolores Star.
Okay. From where?
Dolores, Colorado.
Dolores, Colorado. I'd love to see that.
in 1897.
But again, you're going to have to send it in the mail, right? And I really don't have a mail address you can send to other than Premier. Now, if you send it to Premier now, it'll be safe because they'll be able to get it to me. So I guess that's the way you're going to have to do it.
Well, maybe you ought to have a contest to see who can find the oldest reference in the world of UFOs.
Well, that's one of them. No question about that. So feel free to fire that off to me. I'd really appreciate it. That's a long time ago. To me, modern ufology began really around 1947, I would say. But you know, there were those cave paintings and all the rest of it. So perhaps as long as human beings have been gazing into the heavens, they've been seeing things they cannot identify. What do you think? East of the Rockies, Matthew, in Florida. Hi.
Got me?
I got you.
Oh, cool. Well, I've been studying the conspiracy theory subculture, and what I'm worried about now is it's almost a setup to me because worst case scenario, there could be another disaster, whatever, that could try to rift the conspiracy theory subculture from the national identity of America.
Well, what a tragedy that would be.
Well, it would be, because, I mean, you had a call last night about the whole September 11th thing, and I don't even want to take one side or the other now because it's getting so heated, if you understand. So, but it's almost like the reaction to it is itself a controlled phenomena to the disaster. The reaction to disaster is itself a controlled phenomena.
Well, I can't think of a major disaster or killing or mass killing, as in 9/11,
right.
that has not generated the kind of thing you're talking about. All of them do in America. America loves conspiracies.
Right. I mean, I know you probably haven't had Alex Jones on. I heard the call last night, but
I have never had Alex Jones on.
I'm not taking his side or your side or anyone's side because there's even anti-Alex Jones websites that are kind of scary, and I'm not even going to go into those. But you should have Alex Jones on, Tex Mars, Whitley Strieber, David Icke, and
I had Whitley on the other day.
Right. You need to have a night where there's a roundtable about just the conspiracy subculture itself and the phenomena of the culture itself.
Well, it is interesting. I'll give you that.
You isolate it like that. I mean, I've got some crazy theories. I mean, the craziest theory is the most conservative American Indians believe that modern Homo sapiens evolved in the Western Hemisphere 250,000 years ago, I think. But that,
you think that's the craziest?
Well, there's crazier than that.
Yeah, I mean, there is.
We can go to old Earth creationism. I mean, there's even people who believe that the ruins on Mars are from pre-Adamic man.
Yeah, I know. And there's people who think the Earth is still flat, too.
Yeah, there's a very small amount of the population.
And there's others that think there's others that think the Earth is hollow.
Yeah, well, there's a better chance of it being hollow than flat.
You think?
Well, there might be even underground caves, you know, those stories. Not quite a hollow earth, but a hive-like earth. It's like the earth's like a living thing, you know?
Now I'll tell you what. I'd go for that one first.
I mean, like, we're a smaller version of the sun, so we don't have enough mass to fire, but there's like a little nuclear reactor, well, not little, but a nuclear reactor or a fusion reactor at the core. I mean, what else would the core be?
I think that, in a way, our Earth is live, and there are frequencies, sir, that are generated that resonate with our human brain. So I don't think that's so wild to believe that Mother Earth is in a way alive and that we are affected by things that happen on Earth.
I mean, I've had weird experiences. I might have been out of my body the other night.
You might be out right now, for all I know.
But then there's ley lines. There's the magnetic lines of the magical energy that goes over the Earth. I've always been into this role-playing game, Shadowrun, which was the first place I even heard of the Mayan calendar.
It's only magical if you don't understand them.
Well, there's the science. If you buy the Shadowrun game books, I mean, they scientifically talk about magic. It's another dimension. And some people have the gene to manipulate mana, which is the magical energy. That's what they use. They use the term mana. It's like it would be the system international measurement of magical energy.
I thought it was bread.
You know, manna and bread kind of the same, or juice, or mojo, that's all the same.
All right. Well, listen, I will take under advisement your idea to do sort of a roundtable on the whole, not on specific conspiracy theories, mind you. But I will definitely take under advisement looking at the conspiratorial mind in America. There's not one major incident you can name that has not generated around it conspiracies. You know, the killer on the Knoll. And, well, I could go on and on, but I really can't. The clock. I'm Art Bell. Thank goodness for Fast Blast. I mean, how cool is this? Breaking news, folks. From the Associated Press, space probes that visited Mars 30 years ago might have stumbled upon alien microbes on the red planet and inadvertently killed them, according to a scientist theorizing in a paper released Sunday, today. The problem was the Viking space probes of 1976 and 7 looking for the wrong kind of life and then not recognizing it, the researcher said in a paper presented at the meeting of the American Astronomical Society in Seattle. Yikes. This new report, based on a more expansive view of where life can take root, may have NASA looking for a different type of Martian life form when its next Mars spacecraft is launched later this year. Wow. Last month, scientists excitedly reported the new photographs of Mars showed geologic changes that certainly suggest water occasionally flows there. Even now, the most tantalizing sign that Mars is, in fact, hospitable to life. So, in other words, we may have found life and accidentally killed it. Back to open lines in a moment. By the way, I'm getting a lot of Fast Blasts asking, how's my wife doing? Erin's doing just fine. She's enjoying herself. I managed to get, God bless DirecTV, I managed to get a special world dish. Now, they can install that, and if you're from another country somewhere, you should know that. They're able to install a special satellite dish, and it picks up all the Philippine networks. So she gets at least 6 or 7 Philippine TV stations, the one she would normally watch, which is amazing to me, absolutely amazing. What a world we live in. And moreover, earlier in the day today, she found Philippine radio. It also comes along, I guess, with the Philippine package, and we were able to listen to 101.9, which was indeed our favorite radio station in Manila. All of that coming right from the sky. Simply, absolutely amazing to me. Simply amazing. Let's go to the international line. Chris in Alberta, Canada. Hi.
Yeah, hey, Art. I had a question about the Area 51 caller about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, a long time ago. And if that radio transmission was, in fact, canceled by government intercept, was that verified, or do you know anything about that?
I know a whole lot about it. Now, you're referring really to two different things. During the call from that Area 51 caller, we lost our satellite link, is what happened.
Right.
And what actually began happening, the satellite actually, in space, began to tumble. And, of course, when it tumbles, you lose the, the antennas are spot beams, and you lose that immediately. You lose sync, and you lose signal, and it's gone. So that's, if you want to call it a coincidence that occurred right during that wild call, I'll never forget it, but that's what happened.
Yeah, I had a request. Maybe you could go ahead and do that special request line, maybe one of these weekends here again. That possibility?
You mean an Area 51 line?
Uh-huh, the Spill the Beans line, maybe sometime?
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, because, that guy sounded pretty genuine. It'd be pretty hard to kind of put on something the way that he ended up doing that, so.
I know. All right, sure. I will consider doing an Area 51 Spill the Beans line. No problem. The problem is getting people who are willing to call up and do exactly that, spill beans. Believe me, if you work at Area 51, you virtually sign away your soul. And they're not kidding. So getting somebody to call up who's worked at Area 51 and really tell what's going on is no small matter. Let's go to Robert in California. You have achieved the air. Hi, Robert.
How you doing, Art?
Just fine.
Yeah, two quick questions for you. The first, do you watch anime at all?
Do I watch what?
Animated, like Japanese animation.
Oh, sure.
Okay, there's a series of anime that I'd like to point out to you called Crest of the Stars and Banner of the Stars. And it kind of goes in line with genetic manipulation in respect that eventually, in order to travel deep space, we're going to have to change ourselves. I don't think in our physical state, the way with the technology we have now, number one, we wouldn't live long enough. And number two, I don't think we could physically deal with the anti-gravity, you know, not having any gravity.
No, you're exactly right. Human beings are not designed for interstellar space travel at all. We simply couldn't do it.
But what's interesting about this series is they claim that they were manipulated from the original Earth people. This is fast forward maybe 8, 9, 10,000 years down the line where you have several different factions. These people are called the Ob, the genetically manipulated people. But you can actually become an Ob because they're like a state. And then you've got the Empire Mankind. And then you've got all the little independents, and the two of them are trying to gobble up control of all these different factions.
But right, where do you see this, sir?
I actually caught it on G4 Network when they used to be called Tech TV. But you can go out and rent them from any reputable video store. They should have them.
All right, I will look into it. It's clear that the human race is not designed for that kind of travel. Our muscles would atrophy. I believe when astronauts go up and spend, what do they spend these days, 3 months or more on the International Space Station, there, you know, everything begins to atrophy. And that's just in low Earth orbit. So obviously with the time required to get from here to anywhere else, virtually anywhere else, and particularly out of the system, we're simply not designed for it. Now, there may be a way that human beings could be put in some sort of form of stasis. And I think when you see most science fiction movies that show long space travel, that's exactly what's done. They're put in some little chamber and they're frozen or, you know, put under in some way. And I'm sure that's exactly what would have to occur. On our fourth wild card line, John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're on the air.
Hey, Art. How are you?
Very well.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share a couple experiences with you from out of my body. Started back when I was in school. I woke up one evening and there was an entity on my chest, and I tried to get up and it slammed me back down. And I was kind of freaked out by the whole thing because I had never been conscious and had a spirit on top of me or gotten out of my body. But the point being, all of a sudden, I kind of focused in on this electric space heater we had, and it just kind of sizzled and blew up. But if I wasn't awake, I would have never caught it. But continuing on, a couple years, I was able to have these out-of-body experiences. And the one thing I really wanted to share with the listeners is I never knew about the, I guess you guys call it, the old sea hag. But I was actually down in Florida with my family on vacation, and I woke up with an entity on my chest, and I never really could see a picture of what the entity looked like until the first time was down in Florida where I saw this old, scary, sea hag kind of witch-looking entity on top of me, and I never really could put anything together on it until I heard your show. So just wanted to share that with you.
I'll be darned. I don't recall talking about a sea hag, but anything on your chest unexpectedly that's an entity is going to get your attention. How'd you get rid of it?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, when one of your previous shows, I heard some of your callers talking about the old sea hag, the old sea witch.
I'm asking how you got rid of the one on your chest.
She just appeared and tried to get up and got slammed back down, and then just, you know, within a minute or two, that spirit, that thing was gone. But it's very frightening. But I haven't had any experiences for a number of years, but it was a short duration, a couple years that it was happening. And I'm glad that it's finally gone.
Well, I'm glad you're hagless now, too. I've never had anything of that sort happen to me, and I I don't really want it to. That's really weird. Can you imagine waking up with some sort of anything on you, some sort of entity that doesn't appear human? Oh, my God. Let's go here. On the first wildcard line, it's the cat lady. She calling herself from Modesto, California. Hi.
Hi. I didn't identify myself the last time, but I'm the lady that had mentioned the anti-gravity forces that built the pyramids through meditation.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay.
Uh-huh. And you had a good program. I thought the fellow was real interesting that you had on that night. What I wanted to discuss with you was, and you can stop me when I shouldn't mention something, but we had here in Modesto, a fellow that had a death experience. This was years ago. And if people would like to read about it, they can go on the computer to Not Afraid to Die. And his name was Jim Sepulveda. He went to a Chester Smith meeting in Stockton when Chester was he was not doing his music. He was doing,
Okay, well, what he had was a near-death experience, right?
Yes,
because
thank you. Yes, a near-death experience, yes. And he wasn't a churchgoer. In fact, everything that I know about Jim is what he told me first person. It's not third person. But this experience completely changed his life. When he went to that service that night, he had a healing there. Threw away his medicine. The doctor thought he was doubling up on his medicine, so to prove to the doctor that he was not, he agreed to undergo, I guess it's called a catheterization when you go through the groin up into take a picture of your heart.
Yes.
It's either that or an angiogram. I don't remember which. But this was in Doctor's Hospital here.
What was the bottom line? I mean, he had a near-death experience and became religious as a result of it?
Pardon me?
He became religious as a result?
Absolutely. It completely changed his life because he said that wherever he went to this place, and he said the grass was greener than any green he'd ever seen. The sky was bluer than any blue he'd ever seen. In the far distance, he saw something, I think he mentioned like a tree. He walked toward it. He saw a pair of sandals. He looked up, and he was facing Jesus, who told him that he had work for him to do. He came back on the table when they had him all covered up with a white sheet. To make the story short, the x-rays showed that there was nothing any longer wrong with his heart. He was completely healed, and he convinced the doctor that, the story that he had been telling was true. So the people in the different little towns around here, Riverbank, Oakdale, and all these little towns, began to have him come to tell what happened to him. And his fame spread all through California, and pretty soon he was going all around the world. He has since left. He was here for 17 years longer. He did not die of a heart attack or anything. He just he was boarding a plane to come back to home here in Modesto, and they said he was dead before he even hit the ground. A number of years ago.
Of what?
They didn't. There was no diagnosis made. They said he was just gone.
Okay. Well, I guess it happens, and those miracles do happen. I mean, the doctor I had on last night, one of the very first stories he told was of a man he had examined in order to call the fact that he was dead. No heartbeat, no brain activity, no breathing, nothing that would indicate life. A very careful examination, and 30 minutes later, the guy sat up and was talking, not particularly coherently, according to the doctor, but was talking. Now, how does that happen? How in the world does that happen? But it did. So there are many things in this world of ours that we simply, that the scientists, the doctors, those who should know, don't know. And that makes me wonder why they are so, the majority of them, so adverse to learning about the unusual things that just simply don't make sense. They're scientists. They should be curious when something like that happens that should not happen. But they're not. They just sort of let it go. West of the Rockies, John in San Diego.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much, sir, for having me on your show. It's been a while. I haven't talked to you, I guess, about 10 years ago. With Mr.
Okay.
Jim Wilkerson, Channel 10 News, reporting 300 documents on UFO by Army and College of Fort Meade.
Yes.
Oh, great. You remember.
I do.
Well, sir, as of recently, a couple months ago, I received another amazing letter from Army and College of Fort Meade, and this has to do with a website that has everything about UFO. There are about 9,800,000 reports on UFOs, and some are old, some are new, and some are classified, and the old ones date back to the 40s and the 50s.
All right, John. Well, here's what I would say. I would say sit down, fire the address off to me, and for the rest of you, anybody who would like to send me email, you're welcome to. I am Art Bell at mindspring.com. That's the main address, ArtBell at mindspring.com, MindSpring.com, or artbell@aol.com. The Mindspring address holds a little more, so I'd sort of recommend that one. Let's see. Let's go to Richard in Houston, Texas. You're on the air.
Yeah, Art, I have a copy of the National Geographic, April 1972.
Yes, sir.
Talking about weather. And as of that year, that the average weather damage was $11 billion per year. And in 1934, this is from that National Geographic, on Mount Washington, New Hampshire, there's a naval observatory up there. They clocked winds at 231 miles per hour, straight-line winds, at 6,300 feet. And grapefruit-sized hail in Coffeyville, Kansas, that was 1934. I think that was before I was born.
Yes,
one year before. 1 year before. And most rainfall in 1 year was in India in 1860. They had 1,042 inches in 1 year.
It's a lot of rain.
So this weather, strange weather phenomenon is not new. There may be more of it now. But it's been strange weather for hundreds of years.
Well, of course, sir. Weather is chaotic. Absolutely chaotic. Weather is chaotic. It's the nature of weather to be chaotic. But don't be deceived. What is new is this global warming that we're going through. Now, we can carefully chart the difference and the increases in temperature. And if you doubt it for a moment, take a look at the progression, for example, of what's occurred at the North Pole. It is now 40 or 50% melted. Maybe even more. I've seen some photographs that show the North Pole to be about two-thirds melted. They're beginning to chart ways to navigate. The Navy is charting ways to navigate the North Pole through what was once ice and is now water. And that is progressing at such a fast clip that a lot of us believe the switch has been thrown. And by that, I mean the progression of the melting is becoming faster and faster and faster and faster. The more it melts, the more it melts. And the reason for that is that normally ice would reflect sunlight. If you have ice, you've got a very reflective surface, and it reflects sunlight. Now, as it melts, you get more water. Water, on the other hand, absorbs sunlight. So it's kind of a self-propelling process. The more melting you get, the more melting you get, and in the next very few years, there's going to be no ice at all at the North Pole. Already, polar bears are beginning to drown. They depend on floating ice to live. Well, guess what? There's very little, not enough floating ice to support the polar bears, so they're dying left and right at the North Pole. The sheets of ice that are on land on the South Pole, Antarctica, they're beginning to become unstable, and should they go into the water, sea levels will rise very quickly. Live near the seashore, do you? Look out. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.